All right, sound check, Aruni.
Third time lucky. Check, check.
Yeah, most of the other ones didn't work. All right, everyone. Hello and welcome back to the Publisher Lab. I'm Tyler and this is John.
Hello. Hello, folks. Welcome back.
So it's a new year, John.
It's coming up for a new year. I am looking... Oh, is this coming out before the new year or after the new year?
I'm not sure. Probably in between somewhere. Okay. So nevertheless, you guys know it's going to be a new year soon, or it is now.
Yeah. So hopefully you're in front of a roaring fire with a nice drink by your side. So we've actually got...
And not behind the wheel of a car.
No, definitely not behind the wheel of a car. So yeah, we hope that you are ready for a good show. We've actually... put in quite a bit of effort on this one, haven't
yeah,
we?
Yeah, for you guys that may or may not be surprised here, we don't put in usually a ton of prep time for these. We usually just kind of like have a general subject that we've either gotten from you guys or gotten from a publisher that we've talked to that week, and we just kind of go off of whatever expertise that we tend to have in the area or guests that we have with us. But this is one we said before we wanted to give you guys some ideas, 12 basically trends for publishers to look for in 2017. And so John and I kind of, you know, between the two of us, we came up with 12 things that we think ultimately are trends and things that you can do and take advantage of in this upcoming new year.
Yeah. So get your pens and paper out if you're those kind of people, if you're Amish.
and if not, if you're just a go by memory type person, then just sit back and relax, because I really, John, we did put a decent amount of time into these, and I think coming away from kind of looking at the list that we have in front of us, some of this stuff is really good. I mean, this is stuff that if you're a site owner or a publisher and you took this stuff to heart, you could really do some damage here in 2017.
Yeah, you can really build on what you've already got. So, I mean, I've split it into three kind of general areas. We've got 12 things, as I said. Really, mobile, SEO, the optimization of content, and then that sort of connection between user experience and earnings. And then really kind of the stuff to keep an eye on, the bad stuff really, I would say, which is fighting spam and poor user experience. There's a whole bunch of things that have been happening in the industry, which we're going to go over one by one. And then really last one is a little bit more positive, is looking at the whole landscape of how programmatic is changing things and really ad tech and industry changes. So I think between all of that, it's useful, practical things that you can take away and do, and also some things that you should be keeping an eye on, which will just keep you ahead of the game in 2017.
Yeah, so let's get started with something that I like to talk about, which is SEO, mobile, optimization of content, all that stuff sounds fun. So what's the first thing you've got on your list, John?
I'm gonna say AMP or progressive web apps.
Okay.
That's kind of number one, because when Google particularly get behind something, they really get behind something. So we've already talked about it in another podcast, but getting your site at least indexed. So something that we've done with this AMP converter that we built was only basically setting it up so that your site will respond to the Google spider that there is an AMP page for it, so the AMP spider, so that you can start to get indexed for AMP without jumping all the way in. And I think that that's a good way to get going. The progressive web apps, very early days. This is really sort of further out into the distance of 2017.
But if you're a publisher that likes to, you know, be on the cutting edge of stuff, which a lot of them do,
keep a really close eye on it. I think it's going to be, that's my prediction for 2017. I think that it may even overtake AMP as a priority.
So we talked about that. If you're interested in finding out a little bit more about that, we talked about that in podcast number 8 with Ohad Tazer, who's from Google, who actually just joined our team. So we had him on, and we dove into what a progressive web app is a little bit further.
Yeah, just to remind people, it's using functionality from a smartphone in what is effectively a web application rather than an application on your phone. So it's not a downloadable thing. It's something that's happening in the web page.
Absolutely. So, so AMP, we know it's a big thing. Probably
accelerated mobile pages.
Accelerated mobile pages. And this idea of progressive web apps, basically things that speed up your pages very quickly, these cache pages that are going to happen very fast.
And then really good for user experience.
Really good for user experience. That'll be an even bigger deal. That's almost a sure thing. 2017, yeah. That's going to be
one of those
deal.
Two things is going to float to the top.
So So speaking of Google, one of the other things that I thought was really interesting that I see on your list over here, John, is this this Google initiative for mobile first, right? And so this seems to be when you nailed it earlier. You said when Google really gets behind something, they really get behind it, and they made a big deal out of talking about the mobile indexing was gonna. This was big. Yep. And when Google, their search division, tells you that something is big, in my experience, it usually is. I mean, it's not usually just one of those things that, you just brush it off. It's not that big of a deal. When they say it's big, I think they said something like it's going to affect 95% of sites or something like that. And I think, you know, they backed off and said, well, listen, it's not the boogeyman. As long as you're mobile ready and you've optimized your site for mobile, this and that. But it's really important to understand that right now there's two indexes. There's a desktop index and a mobile index. So you rank a certain position in Google search results for desktop and for mobile. Google is moving towards, they are going to have a single index, and they're going to move towards the mobile one. So wherever you rank on mobile is where you're going to rank, period. So if you've spent all your time on a desktop and you look at all your search metrics and things like that in SEMrush and all that kind of stuff only on desktop, that's all going to go away. And so it's really important to start taking a more mobile-centric look at your site from an SEO perspective, I think. And I think that, I mean, they've said, hey, it's going to take a little time for us to roll this out, but they're testing it now. So that tells me that 2017, at some point, this thing's going to be getting a full rollout.
It's going to get rolled out, and we're going to end up with some big winners and, unfortunately, some big losers in this. And what you need to do is make sure that you have I mean, this is a strategic decision. Just forget about desktop.
Yeah, I mean,
basically, it's going to be fine.
The first two things on the list are AMP, mobile.
That's why they're number one and two. I put the technological change first because I think that's something that people can get to grips with. Mobile first is we're a little bit out of control about because it's something that's going to happen to us.
Yeah.
From the Google algorithm. So, but both of those things are intertwined. I think if you are AMP indexed. Or you get into progressive web apps early, you're going to do well on mobile first. So start thinking about it now, guys.
Do go together like peanut butter and jelly. Fortunately,
they do. That's peanut butter and jam for us British people out there.
Do you guys eat peanut butter and jelly over there?
Yeah, I do.
Across the pond.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Is that like a childhood favorite snack?
Oh yeah, little sandwich.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Marmite. We don't have that mixed. Marmite and peanut butter.
I thought Marmite was an Australian thing.
No, it's British.
Is it?
Vegemite is the Aussie one.
Okay.
Yeah.
Fair enough.
Love it.
So number three on your list would be what then, John? Falling under the same kind of same mobile SEO kind of category.
Yeah, I would be looking at your top landing pages on mobile. Doing it by platform in Google Analytics and making sure that you are... understanding where your rankings are. Now this is it's sort of basic stuff, but not only looking at your user experience metrics, you know, what we've talked about before on the podcast, bounce rate, time on site, page views per visit for each landing page, see which ones are the most engaging. Just spend all your time looking at this landing page optimization for mobile. So that's the third one on the list. Is two general, like one software or one specific for the way that you can improve user experience. The second one is Google's response, and then this is stuff that you've got to get going on. And I would have a rolling content update strategy for mobile over at least the first 6 months.
I think that's really smart. So what you're telling people to do essentially is start at the top. So if you're going to be trying to do things to affect these different things that we expect. You know, trends are leading in this direction towards mobile, AMP. Start with your top landing pages. So where you're getting the majority of your traffic, where you're earning, your highest amount of views, all that kind of stuff. That's where we should start.
Yeah, for sure. And where there is a disparity between your desktop ranking and your mobile ranking, spend time on those ones because obviously, you've got ranking on desktop for those particular article pages. Why aren't you ranking higher in mobile? Who else is in there? What are they doing? Have a look at your competition. That would be my third thing on the list.
So So that kind of lends itself to, you know, we talk about landing pages and how we kind of touch on, you know, which ones are earning the most. So, John, if we want to talk about earnings, this is kind of like, this is like a song that we sing often, but I see on your list EPMV.
It would be remiss of me not to not to include this. So session earnings, which, you know, you guys will be very, if this is the first time you're listening to the podcast, go back, listen to the one on EPMV, then you'll understand. But you need to be adding all of your revenue sources together for you, from your advertising revenue, and then dividing it by your number of sessions per thousand. So it's a good metric. It keeps you on track. I think this year, because we're going to get into it in a little bit more detail in a minute, the trend is overall, we'll just go into number five, but basically the trends overall towards user experience in advertising are lending themselves to publishers spending time looking at metrics that include user experience when they're talking about revenue success. So, you know, if you're making forward progress, make sure that you're making forward progress not only for your bottom line, so how much money you're making, but also that it includes your user experience as well.
What I think is really interesting about that, John, is you know, this is one of those things where we've had this idea of ad blocking and the emergence of ad blocking, which is kind of like a thorn in everybody's paw, both advertisers and publishers. This is one instance where, in some cases, it may actually be helping us, because ultimately what it's going to help us do is this is a drum that we've been beating on this show for a while, but take into account user experience, because not just because it's important for your users, but because it's important for your ad revenue too, right? Better UX equals better ad revenue. It's something we've proven over and over again. But I think these trends, we're starting to see kind of the industry catch up to this kind of thinking.
Yeah, so keeping an eye out for what is happening in the industry as a whole. So number five is really trends towards UX, keeping an eye on that. So there's a Coalition for Better Ads, which has, you know, been founded by, I think it was in the summer, by Google and Facebook and a whole bunch of advertisers and agencies and lots of different organizations, that it's in their interest to make ads better. Keep an eye on what they're saying. And I think this is going to feed into new or some changes that we're going to see in policy from Google and so on. If you guys can hear that, that's
you hear slight bells in the background.
There's bells in the background. That's not Santa on his way. That is, they're feeding the piranhas in our office.
We have piranhas in our office, and so down the hall, if you call it a hall, like down like a couple spaces to our left, we have a tech team that has a giant fish tank filled with piranhas and Oscars, and they feed it on a regular schedule, and they ring the bell when they do.
Yeah, sorry about that.
So that's actually a really great transition for in the way we had noise spam there for a second. You mentioned the category as we move into number six of, you know, this, you know, moving into a series of trends around fighting spam and fighting poor user experience, which is really a nice transition from where we came from.
Watch out for those piranhas in the tank. So it's all been in the news recently. Fake ads, fake content. You know, so a fake ad, for example, would be a native ad that says, you know, Donald Trump dies of a heart attack, you know, something like that. People click on it because they're like, what? What's happening? And then you find out that it's a fake. And what you've just gone and spent some time looking at a page and got something completely different. So that's fake ads.
This is one of those things where we have this rare instance where a trend in the advertising and kind of like publishing industry is like a really popular topic overall in society as well. So, I mean, here in the U.S., it's a big story right now because, you know, it's this idea that fake news potentially influenced our national election. Mm. And so you have this kind of like uprising now of people, well, we have this fake news. Basically, the quality of the internet, which, if you browse the internet very long, you're very likely to find poor quality native ads and fake news and encounter all this stuff. We've all ran into it. But now we're starting to see a lot of the platforms that are responsible for kind of partitioning the internet out to us as users, trying to find ways to improve the quality.
Yes.
Right? So what does that look like?
Well, I'd say... I think you're going to see a reaction from the industry players to try and, you know, you've seen it already, Google and Facebook both saying, right, we're going to crack down on this fake news stuff. We're not going to allow ad exchange or AdSense ads to appear on this fake news. And, you know, I think particularly in Macedonia, it became a cottage industry. There were like a whole bunch of teenagers basically writing this stuff.
And, talk about a good gig, better than delivering newspapers, right?
That, well, especially, yeah, probably in Macedonia, that I think they were doing some good money. But they all got stomped on pretty quickly as soon as it became up, you know, it came out. And so I think you'll see a trend towards that. Actually trying to stamp it out altogether is going to be really hard because, you know, you've got sites like The Onion, you've got satirical sites that write, you know...
tongue-in-cheek type articles.
Exactly,
about
you know, it could be a fake diary entry for, you know, a politician's wife or something like this. These things happen because this is journalistic kind of like tail pulling, you know, people are doing it because it's funny. Now, will they be lumped in to this sort of purge or not? You know, are Google and Facebook going to become the content police? Probably not.
I don't think it's a gig that they're really interested in getting into.
Imagine trying to actually, you know, really fact check everything that goes up. It's impossible. But here's something that I think is interesting, and that we've seen quite a bit. Obviously, we've seen a lot of sites come through in the platform, is people setting up pages where they've copied the content. So they scrape the content from a news source, and they're just copying that content. Something that you could do in 2017, and I've got it down there, is talking about protecting your original content and making sure that you do your DMCA takedowns for people who are out there
stealing
your content and putting ads around it, and then buying traffic in Facebook or something like that to try and do an arbitrage model. Things like that I think is also, I mean, we're certainly on top of it. We keep a really close eye on whether sites are scraping content or not.
And so, if you have a popular site, it's common and probably has happened or will happen to you in the future that someone will probably try to take your content, and you have an outlet to kind of response to this, so a lot of people actually don't know that.
Yeah, DMCA is the way that you do it, and you send a DMCA takedown request. You can send it to the ad network, the host, and the registrar, and it pretty quickly it all gets taken down. But it's a bit like whack-a-mole, you know.
Yeah.
You get one, another one pops up. But it is something that you need to be aware of, and there is a good site that you can use, a free tool called siteliner.com, Copyscape. I think they're owned by Copyscape, actually. And we'll put that in the show notes for afterwards if people want to use that. It's a really interesting tool. You put your URL in, and it shows you if your content's appeared elsewhere. Another really easy way of checking is to take maybe one of your articles, your top articles, grab a couple of paragraphs of your content, paste it into Google, make sure you come top. If somebody else is coming up top and you wrote that article, they've stolen it and done something to appear, get themselves to appear above you in Google.
That's essentially the biggest thing that can happen to you from a negative perspective with this, right, is that essentially from an organic standpoint, you write something, you do all the right things, and then somebody else steals it and then beats you in Google. And like you said, there's usually some kind of...
they'll be doing something tricky.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Something not above board. So speaking of things not above board, we were talking about Google policy earlier today, and one of the things I thought was really interesting that you had mentioned that you had on your list here was you talked a little bit about ad density being a bigger deal maybe in 2017. So can you tell me a little bit about that?
Yeah, sure. I think and when we're talking about Google policy, that's just an abbreviation. It's really Google AdSense Terms of Service and Google Ad Exchange Terms of Service or Terms of Use. And it's keeping to the Google's rules about showing ads and Google's rules about content and traffic sources. So just to make sure that everyone knows what we're talking about. As things will progress in 2017, I'm being careful here not to stray off into stuff I'm not allowed to talk about, but I am going to make a prediction that ad density is going to become a hot topic. So last year, if you guys remember, AdSense changed their terms of service that instead of having a maximum of ads per page of 3 AdSense ads, they said, you can use your discretion, but don't make sure that you're not making the ads too prominent and distracting from the content. And that makes sense. If you've got an enormously long page and 3 ads, you know, I think Google have done the right thing there. But what they have done is that they've made the rules more opaque, so it's made it more difficult for publishers to keep to the rules because it's now a judgment decision.
Yeah.
I think that this will probably be extended to the idea of ad density being in a ratio to content. So 2017, I think we'll see something come down the pipe from the guys at Google about making sure that the ads are in their right in the right priority. So in other words, that they don't take up more pixels on the page than content. So I'm predicting that.
Just a good rule of thumb, just to get started on that, is if you have pages right now where there's more ads than content, you probably want to head in another direction there. You want more content than ads on your page.
Yeah. So a pixel ratio between number of pixels devoted to ads, number of pixels devoted to content. Make sure that you're on the right side of that.
So basically what we're talking about here is the quality of the quality of a site, the experience for the user. And I think one of the things that also has kind of been a really hot topic this year that I think is about to probably get turned into a lot bigger deal this year is let's just be honest and call it what it is, these bottom of the barrel native ads. I mean, we've all seen them before, sometimes on very legitimate sites, but it's like, you'll never believe what she did next, you know?
Yeah,
and it's like,
right.
You know, it's this woman like in a bathing suit, like getting out of a car in a weird way or something.
And that's just some of the more tame ones.
Yeah, quite honestly, yeah.
So I'll give you guys a tip, okay? Here's something that I found out the other day, which I will share with you. Now, I'm not going to say who, but one of what I would call a crappy native ad network cookie their publishers so that they will see. So if you've logged in from their dashboard into your account, you'll be cookied, and then the ads that you see on your site will be nice and less racy.
Oh,
now,
wow.
The ads that you will see if you're in incognito and don't have that cookie enabled will be the racy ones. And when I mean racy, I mean it's basically porn.
If there's a line there, they're dancing on the line.
Yeah, it's basically porn. So I think that we're going to hit the rock bottom in 2017. I'm predicting rock bottom, and I mean that literally. For the bad, I would say that it's been the race to the bottom for a very long time in terms of trying to get clickbait to such a level that you just can't not click on it. Do you know what I mean? It's sort of like, if you're a male being, click here to see naked ladies. Basically, that's what it's saying. And a lot of men will do that. I don't know if you've clicked on these, Tyler, but the temptation is definitely there because you're reading your article about the news, rugby, whatever it might be, and you're like, what is this? Who is this lady here? And of course it works. And of course these click-through rates are very high. But I think that we will see, I will see that technique be called out for what it is.
Yeah. And we're starting to see that just a little bit now where you're seeing people question brand credibility, right? And I think for a long time, larger, more prominent publishers have been able to say, well, listen, the user metrics that we have ultimately have shown us that, hey, this isn't harming our sites. But I think it's going to get to a point where, like you said, I think we're going to be reaching, this thing is reaching ahead here very quickly.
What you've got to remember is that the whole idea of native ad companies is to make content, make the ads look like content. Okay, and if it's going to another page on your own site, that is good because that's more page views for you. If you're sending them away on a two-click ad click, is that diluting the value of the money that you're getting from display advertising, yes or no? And in certain circumstances, it's definitely diluting that. So we've spent a lot of time doing that and including that in our testing. I'm just really calling that for what it is. I think that there'll be a reaction against this from publishers. I think there'll be a reaction against it from the industry.
So speaking of a reaction against stuff, one of the things that we've kind of seen a little bit of a response to here recently, and really from the ad side, is the kind of response to ad blockers and ad stoppers and things like that that have kind of popped up.
Yeah, so ad blocking I mean, it's still something that a lot of people talk about. So there is something that's come out recently that Dwayne, when he was at the Google Dublin event, heard that there's been a change in AdX terms of use, that you're not allowed to monetize ad block enabled ads. So in other words, those ads that are allowed through by ad blockers. So I'll just rewind that, because this is how ad blockers make their money, guys, right?
Yeah.
How they make their money is to say, okay, we've got an ad blocker and it blocks ads, but we're going to let some ads through if you cut us in.
It's a shakedown, essentially.
It's a shakedown, yeah. So if you put ads in what we call acceptable ad locations, then we will allow them through to be seen by people who are using the ad blocker. And I ask, I hear you cry, but surely that's not blocking ads anymore. They're saying, but we're blocking the bad ads, and now we're letting the good ads through. And of course, it's going to become a blurry line. Google has come out on the side of saying, hey, we don't want these our Google Ad Exchange ads to be allowed through, and anybody making money of them will be in contravention of our terms of service, and would be booted out from AdX.
The ad blockers sort of show up, and they're just kind of like, oh, you got a lot of nice ads here. It'd be a shame if something happened to them, you know?
That's right.
Let's make sure these ads get through to who they belong to. And that's my attempt at a really bad, I guess, Italian accent. Eventually devolve into Borat at some point.
Maybe we can do a little deal, huh?
Work something out.
Let some of these things through. So that's basically, I think what will happen this year is the ad blocking. I mean, ad blocking is still on the rise. So there are certain ad companies out there that are utilizing more and more intrusive ad types. So in other words, sticky ads. Autoplay video, both of those are the... Some of the sticky ads are actually okay on desktop, but some of the ones that are like the vignettes that pop up, I mean, that's actually a Google ad. Shouldn't talk out too badly about those. But they, you need to get a handle on how this is affecting your users. If you are doing it to an extent that they really don't enjoy it, and you're scrolling down, reading an article, and then this great big video comes up, locks your page... stops you scrolling until it loads, and then it's got video and it's got
or
audio,
never loads, which is really common,
and just
actually
spins and spins, or it pushes you back up to the top of the page when you're on your phone and you're halfway down reading the article, and then the whole page reloads again. All this stuff has got to be brought into the metrics of trying to like solve ad blocking.
You and I were both in a conversation earlier this week where we were talking to a group of publishers actually, and it came up that they were under the impression that autoplay video and videos in general were like some kind of premium ad feature, and that only publishers that could work with certain types of ad networks or partners or something like that, only they were able to do autoplay video. And
well, there's and this is the sort of fallacy that's out there. So you've got in-stream and out-stream video. In-stream is basically when you're watching some video, it's kind of like watching TV. There'll be something before the content and then something during the content, so that's in-stream. Out-stream is when there's a video playing, but it's not in a stream. It's sort of out there. And it's basically, instead of having a 336 by 280 or a 300 by 250, that just a normal display ad, it's actually showing a video. And so brands have been piling into video because they display ads, they're saying, oh, it doesn't work as well for me, because they're looking for engagement metrics. What they're trying to do is say, hey, I had a number of eyeballs who saw this. And I'm not saying the video is bad, but you've got to get it in its right context. You take it out of the context and you put it into the reading context, it's a little bit like having a book and then there's a video starts in the middle of your book. I don't know. It's not really the example. I don't know.
I wonder where you were going with that. It made me chuckle at first.
All right. Too many beers, but you get what I mean. I think that if we're gonna help users and stop them using ad blockers, we've got to get on top of what is annoying and what's not, and really that's data.
So when we start talking about technologies and things like that that are good, I think one of the things to look forward to in 2017 is there a lot of the technology that we use on a regular basis to monetize our sites and make it better is getting better itself, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, we've got three things here, kind of in this security, ad tech, industry changes. Where do you want to start? Which ones do you think are the most impactful?
Well, I think overall, you've got to remember, guys, that we're in an upswinging industry. So programmatic ad sales is good for the industry because it's allowing, as fraud detection gets better, which I think it is, and that was another problem for video, by the way, going back to the earlier problem, like, you know, AppNexus had that problem that they had an enormous amount of, you know, phantom views. I think programmatic is...
Facebook had something really similar too, where they basically were counting, they were counting like everything that was over 10 seconds as like a full video view or
metrics,
something. Like
metrics are still, and don't forget deliverability, viewability, you know, brand safety, all of these sort of ad tech add-ons that brands kind of pay for and agencies pay for in order to try to buy better in quality inventory. Seem to be working, and overall programmatic is on the up because, of course, it's a lot cheaper. So for big publishers, for example, who have ad teams, people selling ads, what you've got to do is if you go out there and let's say, for example, you sell an ad campaign for $50, right? You've done a great job as a salesperson. $50 CPM, let's say, right? Which is a good, that's a decent.
Okay,
that's a great price.
$50 sale is not gonna.
Yeah, you're right. Okay, so let's say you sold $50,000, okay, and it's a $50 CPM.
Cool.
So what big publishers sometimes make take the erroneous sort of view is that they'll traffic that at that rate, and then they'll have that compete with programmatic and it'll probably beat it. But don't forget what you've got as an additional cost is the salary and commission of that salesperson, the cost of the lunch that he paid for when he went out to take that person who bought the campaign from him or her, and maybe the cost of ad trafficking it as well and getting creatives and so on. So it's not a straight comparison between direct sales and programmatic, and I think when you take a good look at an online, and I'm talking about big publishing businesses, you should look at what is the cost of selling things by hand, including the people, and that is, I think more publishers are now looking at it and saying, hold on, if we, you know, I'm sorry, this is a bit of a fact of life. There is this disintermediation where you don't need a salesperson to say, hey, I've got a deal for you, and you'd go, yes, okay, I'll buy it and sign something. You can just get a computer to ask another computer to go and get it for you. And that's what programmatic is. And the more and more this grows, the more the good quality sites are going to do better, and the more that the worst quality sites in terms of advertiser engagement and the results that they get from showing these ads is going to, and I think that's overall a really good thing for next year. So programmatic's on the way up, direct sales are on the way down. Probably bad if you're selling ads, but good if you own a property.
Yeah, and like you said, we've seen that across the board in other industries as well. We saw it with the advent of SaaS software and things like that. The idea of having like a traveling software salesman and things like that has gone down quite a bit because you can buy cloud software directly from a website now. You can educate yourself online, make a software purchase that's fairly large, and just kind of educate yourself and move forward. And I think we're starting to see that trend continue over in other industries as well. With the supply side and demand side of programmatic growing pretty significantly, I think that trend will continue this year.
Yeah.
And now we have technology that's actually going to help with that process as well, that's kind of like maturing, and also other stuff that's kind of coming into the fold too.
Yeah, so header bidding, which has been the sort of, you know, that's been the big thing from 2016.
It's been the darling from 2016.
It has. I think header bidders have been great for the industry, actually. They've sort of shaken things up a bit. And let's remind ourselves what it is. It's the ability to pre-bid before an ad auction. And the concern when you're using header bidders is that they will slow down the loading of your page. So they call that latency. So while you're waiting for an ad call for a price on your header bidder, other things are happening. The user's getting annoyed, you know, half a second's gone by, come on. And so there's the emergence now of what they call server to server. In other words, the call for that is happening before the page loads.
Yeah, so at the server level.
So at the server to server level. And that's why we, you know, we built our platform on the server side, not on the page side. So we did that bearing in mind that we do a lot of optimization, and I definitely welcome that as a move forward. So I think we're going to see more consolidation on yield management. I think we're going to see fewer ad networks and more, you know, what you call yield partners, or, you know, whatever that is going to look like. In other words, trying to get more competition for each ad without any of the deficiencies that we've had as this grows. And it's going to really transform in the next 12 months again. So
if there's one thing that we can say about this entire thing, whether it's header bidding or server to server, those are not the end point of where this technology is evolving, but the end goal of all these things is to create a fair bidding process for all the people that are trying to basically buy and sell ad inventory. And I think that's what we're continuing to see, whether it was publishers creating ad stacks and things like that, and then it was, you know, ad exchanges, and then header bidding, and now we're talking about server to server. We're all trying to accomplish the same thing, like you said, try to create, you know, mediation between these networks so that they're all competitive with each other, and ultimately give the person selling the space the best price for their ad inventory.
Exactly. So I think that all of this is going in the right direction. All they need to do is embrace session earnings, and that they will begin to understand how the difference between what a header bidder says they're going to pay you and what they actually pay you, and then the difference between what a header bidder price that you get and what you could have got in the ad exchange. So a lot of this stuff sounds really complicated, because it is. It is way more complicated than it needs to be, and I'm welcoming consolidation in this space, and I think that's what we're going to get this next year.
And so kind of I hate to end on kind of, I guess, end on a responsible note, I would say. So one of the last things we have on our list here, we mentioned this category, security is a piece of it. We heard a tale today, one that I'm actually really familiar with, I've encountered myself and then, you know, seen across the internet for a while. But it's this idea of hackers, you know, dealing with SSLs, and then, you know, obviously the worst case scenario being de-indexed in Google because of some kind of malicious attack on your site.
Nightmare scenario. So basically, you didn't update your server, was left vulnerable because the software wasn't updated, or you were the point of failure because you used, you know, your date of birth as your password, or something like that. Something happened to allow hackers to take control of your site. And the really bad thing about this is that sites get taken over, but they do it sneakily.
Yeah.
So they do it on a portion of traffic, and what they're doing is they're redirecting users to, I don't know, whatever it would be. You know those big malware alerts where it says, your site has been infected, click here to, you know, sort of get rid of it. And you know that it's a scam, but you can't close it, and you have to do that control alt delete, close Chrome, you know, all that
stuff.
So
many people fall victim. My wife, actually, I came home the other day and my home MacBook had a virus on it, and I tried to retrace the steps with her, and I realized what had happened, and I was like, oh no, it's going to be a pain in the butt to get this thing to go away. But one of the things I'll tell you that you can, so this is becoming more and more common. I've seen this more in the last year than I've ever seen it before in my life. And I'll tell you how it's happening most of the time, John. Most people are using a pretty common CMS system now. They're either using WordPress, they're using Joomla, or they're using Drupal.
Mm-hmm.
One of those three things. And so what happens a lot of times is someone that is what we would describe as like a white hat, or like a, you know, a good guy in the hacking world, will uncover a vulnerability in WordPress, or vulnerability in a plugin, or something in Joomla. Joomla is actually really bad about this. So they'll uncover something, and then they'll tell the Joomla people, and they'll release a patch. Now, here's the rub. When they release that patch, they alert every bad guy in the world that there's a vulnerability. And so what they'll do is they'll hop into those updates, and they'll figure out, what did they fix so that I can't get in here? and then they'll just bounce around looking for sites that haven't updated their CMS. So when you see someone like WordPress or Joomla or Drupal release a patch and they say this is a security update,
do it.
Yeah, do it. I mean, you if you have a backup site or server or something like that, run it on your backup. Make sure you're not going to blow your site up. But in most cases, it's something that's that a lot of times it stops what they call a SQL injection. And so what that does is there's usually some kind of open search bar or format or something on your site. And what will happen is somebody will throw a piece of code in there, leave a bracket open, and hit search. And what they'll do is it'll basically give somebody an access to the whole backend index of your code. And they'll just kind of dip in there and away they go.
They just paste something in, a piece of JS that will redirect the site.
And they do a lot of times what's called permissions escalation, where they'll get in and they'll give themselves just enough permission to get in, and then once they're in there, they create another user and give that user privileges above that, and they go all the way until they have super admin privileges and they can just go to town.
Yeah, and you won't know about it until the worst possible scenario, and this is what we heard from a publisher that we were talking to the other day. Advising one of our publishers, they got themselves de-indexed, and as I said, this all happened on their CMS. Actually, I think it was their server got hacked. It was different.
Yeah. But that actually happens from the same thing that I was talking about before. What happens is they'll get into the site and they'll actually be able to access server information once they get into the CMS.
Into the cPanel and then they're away.
Exactly.
So then you've got the arduous duty of getting yourself clean and so on. So this is our final point. If you are not secure, if you do not have an SSL for your site, get it, because you will thank me. And then review your passwords often and make sure that you always update both your server and your CMS software to make sure that everything's up to date and you haven't got any patches that are missing.
So that way you can prevent any headaches in the new year, and you can do all the awesome stuff that we talked about. You can get ready for mobile. You can check your landing pages. Start with those things first. Measure your EPMV, and you can avoid all the other kinds of bad things that we talked about throughout the show. That's right. Things to watch out for.
Yeah, you can avoid people enabling ad blocking on your site because you've got such a great user experience, and you can make sure that you're taking advantage of this upswing that is going to happen as more and more advertisers spend more money on mobile, and you're doing better in mobile because you're prepared. You're going to have a really good year, and I'm hoping we'll be part of that, either on the podcast or if you ever did decide to use our system, we're in a great place as an industry, and isn't the internet doing a lot of good? Just remember that. How much information is there now?
And you know what, guys? Have a lot of fun too.
Yeah.
This is fun stuff.
It's not all headaches, and of course, when you're getting rewarded in a way that you're making passive income, things are happening for you even when you're sleeping. That's then you've got a great business.
You can sit back, have a drink, click on a couple of bottom of the barrel native ads, and just relax.
Just scroll on through them. Oh, yeah.
All right, guys. Well, thank you very much for joining us. We'll be back here next week.
Thanks very much. Thanks for listening.